This is Sith Talk.
Ladies and gentlemen, rebel scum and loyal to the Empire, this is Sith Talk, the show that is primarily only talking about the Acolyte for the next 6 months. Just kidding. But we talk about a lot of things here at Sith Talk. TV news, movies, books, comic books, and everything else that comes in with Star Wars. But like I said, we're not even going to rip the Band-Aid off today. Finally, the day has arrived for some of us who had not gone to Star Wars Celebration. And we are finally getting a good and accurate depiction of what the possibilities of the show, The Acolyte, is. I am your host, one of the hosts, Zach Chrisman, a.k.a. The Lord of Lore, and joining me is Darth Bran. How are you?
I am really good, sir. I am very excited to be talking about Acolyte trailer, finally.
How do you feel about the Darth Bran? I just kind of made it up. It was a little close to Bane. I was like, he's got to have something like of a Sith Talk vibe, but we can work it later.
That or Darth Boylan is usually what I go with.
Boylan, but man, Darth Bran is so close to Bane. I was like,
I know, but it also seems like Bran cereal. Like I just give you the runs. So I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you. I do have some good notes. This whole Acolyte thing, which we're gonna get into, has really spawned one of my buddies to check out the show, and he is complimenting you a lot and. A lot more than he's complimenting me. No, I'm kidding.
I am the brains of the bunch. You're the brawn.
Yeah, well, I'm Darth Brawn. So he's intrigued, and you might get another listener for Don't Burn the Sacred Text, because he's really inspired to pick up the High Republic series. He checked out Light of the Jedi, and he really loved it, but now he's getting inspiration to keep going, you know.
Hopefully it's going to happen a lot more, you know, not necessarily just people listening to us, but people checking out the High Republic with the Acolyte coming out and kind of opening up that era, and maybe somebody that I care deeply about making an appearance, you know.
Well,
like that.
It's also one of those things that I always tell people with Clashing Sabers. What makes this show a lot of fun is I'm so different than a take from Drew. I'm so different than a take from you. Everybody has these completely different takes, and even if the takes are alike, they also draw inspiration from other things.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what I always find. You kind of find people you like tend to agree with, and if you don't agree with them, you also have somebody on the other side of like, oh yeah, maybe I agree with this person a little bit more. Or maybe it's not even about agreeing. Maybe it's just, you know, I think our biggest job is inspiring you to think more about a galaxy far, far away.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the great things about Star Wars, you know, we think of it as like you agree with me, you don't agree with me, but it's like even the things that we agree on, you can come out from different perspectives, you know? Like, take, you know, like my favorite moment of Luke throwing away the lightsaber, like, you can look at that from different angles. Drew and I have different opinions on the effectiveness of that scene cinematically and thematically. And like, it's all, but we get to the same point that is, you know, an important point in the movie kind of thing. So it's a lot of fun. And, you know, we also have just a great community on Facebook and our Patreon and everything. If you guys haven't checked those out, that are just constantly talking, like you can go in there and ask questions. People are answering them, you know, giving you recommendations about what to watch going forward to get ready for the Acolyte and stuff like that. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun to be a part of this community.
And how are you doing? You doing pretty good?
Yeah, man. Just working, getting back into the swing of work after spring break. It was a good and productive spring break, but you know, it's kind of one of those, I need a vacation from my vacation thing. So,
yeah, I feel
got
that.
Got a couple 3-day weekends going on here soon, which is exciting. And just now I'm pushing for, you know, getting to Lindsay's wedding and then getting to the Acolyte, just giving me more reasons to keep pushing forward. So yeah, things are pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. And for some of you who don't know, I've been gone for a minute. In short, and I'll keep it simple, I was in a freak accident that lacerated my jaw and knocked out 3 teeth. I basically took a pipe in the face, like a shooting bullet, And so I'm back. We had no idea what my actual timetable would be. Fortunately, I didn't break my jaw. Otherwise, you would not be hearing from me for at least like 6 weeks, because they would have had to wire it shut at that point. But yeah, I'm back and I'm swinging and everything's good. Everything worked out. It was probably the scariest time. Well, no, it is hands down the worst time of my life. But we rebuilt and we recollected, and I'm so thankful. One of these things, when you go through something like that, is you realize that a lot of the things in your brain that you think are important really aren't, and really it's the everyday things that sometimes you take for granted. And one being simply being able to hang out and talk to you guys about Star Wars. It's a huge blessing to have that when you might run through the risk of not having that. So I figured, you know, what a better way than to talk about the show that I've been presumably talking about since they announced the title. So we're going to get into that. Acolyte trailer came out. We are fresh on that. Upon recording, this is day one of this thing being out. And I wanted to go over a couple topics before we really get into the trailer, because I really think some of these things might help. We're not going to read everything, but we're going to read into a couple things about the Acolyte. So first, the mastermind behind the show spoke about her take on the Star Wars series, getting the chance to explore the bad guys as the underdog, opposite to what George Lucas did in the original trilogy. What I love about that automatically is it already answers some things that I see other people questioning about how Jedi heavy it is. But anyway, if Star Wars is about the underdog versus the institution, in the Acolyte, the Jedi are the institution. I was so interested in a storyline where the Jedi were at the height of their power, and I don't mean the Phantom Menace, because at that point, there's a Sith Lord in the Senate, and they're not picking up on that. Like, it's a thing I've heard of, but not a thing that you would ever consider you'd be interacting with. I love that comment, because I feel like that's what I want the show to be. Talking about these things that we've been talking about 4 years, and you know, look, I'm just gonna say it. Like, I've had my worries about Disney Plus and Star Wars, and there has been rumors about this show specifically that what it originally was supposed to be is not what it is, and you know, these comments alone say no. This is exactly what I was hoping it would be. Do you have any thoughts on this comment alone? I think this comment is one of the most important ones.
So these are from Leslie Headland, right?
Yes, Leslie Headland, yeah. The showrunner of The Acolyte.
So, I mean, it's definitely, I like the idea of it being an inverse of what George Lucas was showing, you know, with the Jedi being the institution at the height of their power, right? And they're not being a Sith Lord in the Senate. Like, what do we do during a time of peace, and what disrupts that peace, right? Like, we kind of have that in The Phantom Menace, but it's not really that. And then we kind of skip over the Clone Wars if you're just talking about just the movies, right? And we go back and we fill that in later. So I like the idea of the setup. I mean, I don't know if it moves me in one particular direction or the other. I don't necessarily think the idea of the show not being what it was originally intended is necessarily a bad thing. That could mean that it's improved. And
100%.
So, yeah. So it's kind of like one of those situations where, okay, it's nice to say, but, you know, I want it backed up, you know, with the actual stuff that we see on the screen.
Right. But in these comments alone, you know, and I brought that up because there has been rumors about the show being originally was solely based on Darksiders, and they had changed it to having a Jedi perspective from all this. And I don't care about that.
That makes a lot of sense. Like, that particular aspect of it, I think makes a lot of sense if you're trying to, especially with, you know, Disney Plus needs more subscribers, so they're trying to draw people in. I think it makes more sense. I think you're going to, you know, draw more people in with a screen full of Jedi versus one Sith.
And one of the things, like, this is a counteracting Zach moment where I have completely bashed Kathleen Kennedy for being reactionary. But there is a fine line between studio interference that helps and studio interference that hurts. When you're looking at Madam Web and how they had done like AI studies about like what responds better with the viewer, that's not so great. But when you're hearing about like people talk about the MCU specifically, like with the first three phases, it's like, oh, make no mistake, Marvel is the king of studio interference. Like, that is what they do over there. And it works out great. But hearing the showrunner, the creative, i.e., saying that the Jedi are the institution, it's like, oh, shit. And from this story point, specifically when we're talking about dark side users, it's important to hear that. Like, obviously, it's a lot more complicated than that. And we've had several conversations about the Jedi and their point of views. But from a show called The Acolyte, the Jedi are the institution. I just felt that that was a very big thing to say that was very important to me. You know, like always leave your expectations at the door. But in my mind, if you're making a dark side, like you have to give the audience a dark side show. You have to give the audience some kind of light as to why the villain does what they do. And that's often why when you look at like Magneto and the X-Men, is he a villain? Yes. But you can see where he's coming from and you completely understand that. And I think that is a very important standpoint when you're writing those kind of things.
Well, that's the difference between an antagonist and an obstacle, right? And an obstacle is just in the way. An obstacle is Darth Maul, right? Darth Maul is not the antagonist of the Phantom Menace. It's Palpatine is the antagonist, but Palpatine is not the obstacle, right? He's not in the way, but he is, like, he's not blatantly in the way like Maul is, but he is pushing back against what our protagonists of Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan are trying to accomplish, right? And so there's a distinction there. And so I think we could even see that in The Acolyte. We could see, you know, when I hear the Jedi are the institution, like they're technically still the institution when we get to the Phantom Menace. So what's different about them at this point in time? Well, nobody's questioning them at this point in time, right? They're not questioning themselves at this point in time. That's what I'm assuming, because you have to have a cultural foundation for people like Qui-Gon to be able to see things and see flaws and start questioning things, right? We know Dooku did it before him. We saw it in Dooku Jedi Lost. He started questioning, and we even saw it in Master and Apprentice, the approach that the Jedi were taking. So you have to have the fertile ground for that to happen, and I'm wondering if maybe the Acolyte is where we're going to start to see those
cracks.
Threads, yeah, and those cracks start to formulate where we can have a Qui-Gon Jinn who is very logically, effectively, and importantly pushing back against the institution. Is it because of what happens in the events in this show? I think that's very, very possible. And what I really hear Leslie Headland saying here is like the heart of the show is what we want it to be. And the show has, you can tell from the trailer, the show is going to have heart to it. It's not going to be, oh, we just wanted to get a bunch of Jedi on the screen fighting somebody with a red lightsaber.
Exactly.
There's going to be purpose to it. And that's kind of, when I look at that combined with the trailer, that's kind of my major takeaway, is this thing has a heart to it that we were going for. Whether the focus changed or not, you know, maybe we'll debate that forever. Maybe one day they'll come out and tell us. But the core of any story, and that's what made phase one of the MCU work, the core of that is the heart, you know, that it has. And Kevin Feige was always very careful to keep the heart of the characters and the heart of the story, even if you change the action scenes or what lines they say or even the overall plot of the movie. If you keep that heart there, you keep the themes that you're trying to convey there, you can get there through multiple destinations. And, you know, that's something, I don't know if you've seen Madam Web, but watching Madam Web, okay.
Not yet. I plan on it, but I will. Yeah,
I will. I won't spoil anything. I will just say it definitely lacks that heart, right? And that heart stops the plot from being able to connect. It's not.
It's not that Spider-Man's not in it. It's that the story does not.
The
go
story
anywhere.
Is not effective because you don't. It does nothing to make you care about the characters, and I can see them. Like, even though they have a lot of characters in the trailer, and we don't necessarily know who the main focus is, we have, you know, Carrie Ann Moss obviously is going to be a main focus. We don't know if she's our main focus, our protagonist, if you will.
I feel like Lee Jung got more of a... I mean, I think they're like, going to be the presence of the Jedi portion. Carrie Ann Moss and Lee Jung.
But even the, for lack of a better term right now, we'll call him the side character Jedi, that we saw, you know, just in flashes on the screen, that you can tell that they put intention behind creating the costumes and setting up the aliens and different things like that. Like, the thing I took away from the trailer is that they didn't cut corners on this one. It doesn't feel like, oh, we just shot this in the volume because it was going to be quick and easy to get it out. It feels like, no, we actually put time into crafting this story and really making sure that it is what we want and need it to be, because they need the hit.
I think my one of the bigger things, and there's so much there. This is a very quick trailer, and to be honest with you, I would have categorized it as a teaser. It says a lot in the details for a show like us to pick out. And with this interview being added, it helps us kind of put some of those pieces of where it might be heading. It was a relatively short trailer. But while we're talking about this, what I'm hoping with The Acolyte is that it is a think piece, and it's something that we've talked about, like with Ahsoka specifically before. Perspective. We said that Ahsoka show would be about perspective, and that's what I want this show to be. I want these characters to be conflicted in all ways of where to go, where to move, what to do, and I want that morality being questioned of the Jedi, of the Sith, of the maybe the characters that are in between all of that. That's my biggest thing. Is like, let's air out what this is, and that's why I find that line, what do they say, the Force is about power and those who use it. I'm kind of generalizing because I'm obviously talking to you guys, but that's what I want us to talk about, like, why do they have the power and how should we use it. I want that to be the question, and I don't even necessarily need the answer, but I want our characters to question every step of the way. And part of my prediction specifically with this trailer is I don't think Amanda Lestenberg is the bad guy. I don't think that's even remotely close. I think, just again, by watching the teaser trailer that's a minute 46, I think both sides are trying to, the Amanda Lestenberg side and the Jedi, are trying to crack this case that ultimately ends up being a Sith Lord at some point in here. I think she's trying to find the Sith. She's at the same spot as Lee Jung and Carrie Ann Moss, and they're both fighting each other to get to the bottom of this. I don't think she is... I think she wants to be a Sith, or is tracking down some darker learning. I think ultimately the show is completely about the Sith, but it's two people from different Force perspectives tracking them down in a different way. And to be fair, like, I don't think the Jedi know that there's a Sith Lord here. I think they're both trying to figure out what is happening in this certain area that we have no idea what that is. I think they're both tracking it down, and they meet up just by tracking down this same thing.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll see a Sith Lord necessarily. We obviously have lightsaber.
We have to.
I don't know that we have to.
We absolutely have to. It's a red lightsaber. It's called the Acolyte. Like, that's where I draw the line.
Lightsaber. It's a red lightsaber, but we've seen red lightsabers in the hands of people who are not Sith before.
But the Acolyte, the name in its own, what is an Acolyte in the Star Wars world? It's a Sith follower, a Sith Acolyte. It has to be a Sith Lord. Like, this has to lead up to the Sith. That to me is just like a null and void.
There's a difference between there has to be and there should be. And we want there to be. I definitely think there should be. I think that that's best for the story. I definitely want it to be. But I don't want to set up an expectation. It's particularly, I'm thinking in season one, right? Because I'm imagining this show being multiple seasons just from the get. Because they haven't announced any other shows and they're going to want to keep putting content on Disney Plus. So why not, you know?
Right, but I want this show to stand on one season.
No, I agree. You know? But I don't necessarily think... I can see paths in which they could have acolytes of the dark side that are not Sith. Something of an Inquisitor style, or even a Kylo Ren and Snoke thing where they're not technically Sith Lords. So I want to be careful about those kind of expectations there, because I want to be open to whatever the story is, particularly about the dark side, because the main stories we've had of the dark side are of just anger and hate and suffering. And I feel like they're going to take this in a different direction. We haven't seen a pursuit of power to the extent that I think they're focusing on right now. Like, we obviously have Palpatine, but his is like, his focus has really been shifted towards like eternal life more than power. And the power just is a pursuit of eternal life. Power for power's sake, I don't necessarily know if that's Palpatine's jam anymore. I think if we just looked at the original trilogy, we could say that, but now it's more about living forever and, not necessarily power for power's sake. It's what power will get him. Here, I see us having a fight for power and we'll say Sith for shorthand, a Sith Lord that's pursuing power purely for the sake of power. And that's really intriguing to me, because if you think about the High Republic era that this takes place in, I know it's towards the end of it, but in both phase one...
At the tail end, to be clear.
The tail end, yes. But when you look at the books, phase one and three and phase two are all about power in different ways. Phase one and three, you've got Marcian Rowe trying to gain power, the Jedi trying to hold on to power. In phase two, you have the whole thing with the Path of the Open Hand and the Jedi's use of their powers. So you have an angle of power from different perspectives, and that's the direction I think that this is heading, is a conversation about, you know, it says power, who gets to wield it? Like, I think that is going to be the core that we get of this show. And so that leads me to, it
power
could
who
be
gets
things.
To wield it. That was the quote. Yeah.
Yeah. That leads me to, it could be the Acolyte could be something other than just a Sith Lord. Like, that's the easy answer. I think it's the right answer, but I don't necessarily know if it's the only answer.
Right. And it potentially could not be. But, and it's unfortunate that I can't use any of my vast EU knowledge, specifically the Darth Bane books. And I want to be careful. Like, I do not... So I'll say this front and clear, because I have to reference these things. I do not expect Lucasfilm to take these Bane books, to take Darth Plagueis, to take these books into account. When I reference these, I'm simply talking about the influences that they could have on this story. And specifically, like, even if you remove these things, the whole idea behind the Sith, even in the movie universe, is that they had been sleeping, biding their time for the right time to take over and to take power. And in this story specifically, I don't believe the Sith want to be discovered by the Jedi. And ultimately, if you're going to stick to even George canon, they can't be wide known discovered, like, because the Sith have been extinct for over a millennia. But I think the Sith do need to be in this. To me, it would be like calling a Star Wars show The Padawan, but it has nothing to do with the Jedi. I mean, it's kind of like we're making a name that, like, if we write around it, like, yeah, the acolyte is this person, and it's not really about the Sith at all, but it feels like a cop-out. So I agree with you, but I don't agree with you at the same light.
Yeah, and I hear what you're saying.
And I think right now the Sith ultimately don't want to be discovered, but I think that's what adds to the aura of the mystery is, one, what are they doing? Like, this could be our first glimpse at what have they been up to and what are their current plans, and, you know, maybe even show, like, where they're at right now and maybe why they aren't ready to take over the galaxy. That leads to ultimately why the point where Palpatine felt like he was. Could we see a form planning? These are all questions that are just blowing up my mind, but ultimately I do think, like, you need to have a Sith Lord. We saw the red lightsaber, and I know that red lightsabers don't automatically mean Sith in the new canon, but it's a huge tease. To me, it would be like having a show called Gotham, in which you see a bat-hooded figure, but Batman is nowhere in there. Like, it's just one of those things. And I would ultimately like to know, and I'm jumping to story conclusions, but we have Amandala Stamberg, who's clearly not on the side of the Jedi. What does she find? What is her reasonings? What is the Jedi for holding on? And then you have
the
Sith Lords.
The lady with the dreads, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Ultimately, one of the show's leading people.
Yeah. I don't think that's going to be our main villain, though.
No, absolutely not. I think it's going to be a Sith Lord. Like, I'm just... I don't... And I'm not holding on to, like, oh, it should be Plagueis. Like, I have no idea what they're going to do here. I have no expectations. And there, and you do have to be careful. Like, ultimately, what we're talking about today, this is just hopes and things we want. At the end of the day, when I click on Acolyte Episodes 1 and 2, all of my mind gets erased about what I was hoping for, and I watch it. Leave your expectations at the door, specifically with a show like this right now. Like, it is fun to talk about these things, but they need to be negated when you're actually watching it. Go in with an open mind and not like a checklist, because the checklist is what created Madam Web, essentially.
Let's get into, like, kind of more specifically, because we've talked kind of like broad ideas of what the trailer, like, made us think.
Yeah, but, not
like,
a problem.
No, it's been great. But, like, what specifically in the trailer itself, like, stood out to you?
So one of the big things that I wasn't looking for in the trailer, but it's the number one thing that really stood out to me right away, was the fighting styles.
Yes.
And that's something that I'm not really hearing people talk about a lot. The way that this is choreographed is unlike what we've seen in Star Wars when it comes to a specific fighting style. Like, seeing a Jedi being able to go hand-to-hand without a lightsaber and also implementing the Force in those fighting styles was absolutely phenomenal and completely unexpected. And I appreciate that we're getting something new, because it could be very easy for them to just say, to put in this trailer, we'll give the crowd what they want. 50 million lightsabers, here you go. There's like 5 million Sith over here. Let's go to war, whatever. And with this, I completely wasn't expecting a literal knife fight with Jedi. But it seemed intense. It seemed like, at the very least of this short trailer, that the actors had a purpose behind every swing. They look motivated. They look there's a real reason to be fighting. And action without consequence is just visual noise. And even in this trailer, you can tell that they are damn hell-bent on fighting each other. And, like, specifically when you're going into the fighting itself, Carrie Ann Moss fights completely different in her fighting style than like a Lee Jung. Like the, you can already tell based on who they are as Jedi that they fight completely different. And I completely appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, this is a new and different fighting style than we've seen before, but it makes complete sense, especially for this era. Like during the Clone Wars, it's a lot more obvious to have your Jedi come out and start by swinging lightsabers. At this time, it doesn't necessarily tell the best story to be able by having them do that, right? And I think I know people on this network and everywhere else have both things they love about Dave Filoni and things that they think Filoni needs to improve on or don't necessarily like. But one thing that always stood out to me, and it stood out in the Ahsoka series again, is that his fights tell a story. And that's the big thing is like you said, having fights for fight's sake is just visual noise. Like it's not, it looks cool, but it doesn't do anything. Your fights need to tell a story. And you can already tell that they are telling a story both about these individual characters, but about the Jedi overall through these fights. And I don't think we really got enough of the villain to be able to tell exactly what the story she's telling is, but I definitely think that there is something there as well. So that really stood out to me is making sure that our fight sequences are new. I think Leslie Headland, in a previous interview specifically referred to it as Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, but it's a very Kung Fu movie style of fighting. So it's not like a brand new revolutionary style of fighting, but it is for Star Wars. And so if you're going to bring that in, there has to be a purpose behind it other than, ooh, look, that's cool. Or, hey, I like Kung Fu movies. It has to have a purpose. And it's very clear that those things, the moves, why that character specifically is behaving that way, all of those things have a purpose. And I think, you know, bringing in Carrie Ann Moss to fight in this style is very apropos with her experiences in The Matrix. You know, you can kind of see the Matrix vibes going on here.
Carrie Ann Moss in anything is phenomenal. I mean,
yes, but like you specifically see The Matrix in some of her things. And I think that's a good thing because you've got like an established veteran that's going to make it a lot easier to convey it to that kind of background of using visuals to tell a story. All of these things that really just play into your hand, really, of making it easier to direct these actors because they have experience in that. So the intentionality behind the casting leads to what we're seeing on screen with the fight sequences telling a story. Like it's a very reciprocal, symbiotic relationship. So that really stood out to me also. The other thing that stood out to me is the, not the villain, but the other African-American main character that we got. I'm not sure the actress's name, but she's the one that has the swirls kind of painted onto her head. And
yeah,
I immediately went Nile there.
I didn't go straight Nile. I went to Descent of the, what's it called?
From Path of the Open Hand?
Yes.
Yes, and that's what Lindsay mentioned in our chat as well.
That's why
and
I love Lindsay.
Yep. And I think that is much more appropriate. Like especially with her talking about power. So I think we're going to see some connection there. And to me, it would make sense to do that, to have, because the Path of the Open Hand / the Nile is something very easy for the Sith to hide behind and kind of start to manipulate it and use as a pawn, because they want the downfall of the Jedi too, or at least some kind of downfall of the Jedi, just like the Sith do. So I'm hoping we get some kind of connection there. What are your thoughts on that?
I've said that before in previous things, specifically very early on in like phase one, when when we didn't know anything about the High Republic, the whole thing was, how do you create an enemy that isn't the Sith, that's a real threat? And so before I really got grounding, we're talking like Light of the Jedi on, you know, part of my theory was the Sith know exactly what's going on. They know the lay of the land. They're keeping track of everything. They're looking at everything. And predominantly, we don't know how the High Republic ends, so this could be very wrong. But I think the Sith are specifically using this as a masking point to hide their presence and focus fire and keep that Jedi attention away from them. That's always been my thought. We'll find that out. But I think it makes sense that when you live in a lived-in universe, not a world, not Earth, this ain't DCU, there's going to be remnants of every faction. And every faction has a key to the truth that adds to certain things. So I think having the Path of the Open Fist being a remnant in there really adds to these long forgotten, or I guess in the High Republic, recently forgotten ideologies that kind of add to the myth of a lot of things. And we won't know if that is the Path of the Open Fist. We won't know what their perspective is or how they're a part of that story. But I do believe, in all likeliness, that that could be that.
First of all, I love the Freudian slip that you had where you mixed the Path of the Open Hand and the Path of the Closed Fist. I think we should just refer to them as the Path of the Open Fist, the whole, like, forever.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I get it. Dude,
no,
they changed
no, it's
names.
Like, they changed names and it happened so abruptly and stuff that it's, like, absolutely understandable. No, I had to give you shit about that. But, yeah, no, I think there's definitely the possibility of a connection there. Again, I don't want to set,
but
like,
they also have a perspective of the Force.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And that's another perspective that adds on. If this show is about talking about what it means to be a Force user, what it means to have the ability to channel power and ultimately what you do with it, it would make sense for that kind of faction to be in this to add to the comp. Like, I want this show to confuse me about all of it, about the Jedi, the Sith, the Path, all of it. I want to be confused and left in a, you know, obviously we're not trying to write a show about, like, why Hitler was right. We're not saying the Sith, like, need to be, like, they need to convince us that being murderers is a great idea, but they need to give their argument. If this is ultimately about the Sith, we need to hear multiple perspectives of the Force and leave it up to, you know, our heroes or our protagonists to decide for themselves, while us as an audience is like, ah, fuck, when he said, like, essentially, when it comes to the Sith, if there is a conversation with the Sith, I want it to be like, ah, yeah, he's wrong, but fuck, I can see where he's coming from. Like, when you talk about Magneto, and I think Magneto is one of the best villains that you could ever write about. I mean, his background is so horrible. And you can understand where his perspective came from when it comes to the mutant war. Ultimately, you still know that Magneto is a villain, but there's certain aspects where you're like, but I can see where he's coming from. And that's what I want to know about all the factions of the Force being introduced. What is your grounding? What's your perspective? And how do our heroes handle these perspectives? Or even, like I said, Amanda Stanberg, who clearly is, you know, down a darker path, how do these opinions form hers?
Yeah, and I think it, like, I don't think we're going to get any, like, blatant, like, Sith philosophy. I think we're going to get more of a Sith putting the pieces in place to start to turn the galaxy against the Jedi, right? Because we're not really getting that aspect in the High Republic books, which is fine. It's like 150 years removed from yep. The Phantom Menace. So I'm not expecting that. But now we're moving a little bit closer to that timeline. And so what is going to start to push against the Jedi to where public opinion in the Clone Wars can turn on them? Because that's obviously the biggest domino to fall, but that alone is not going to make that change and turn everybody against the Jedi and make it believable that the Jedi turned on Palpatine
but
in an instant.
But it can start the seeds of doubt.
Right, exactly.
And the cracks. I don't think this show, and that's an important thing to like, this show needs to give the audience, while we've been talking about the cracks of the Foundation, and specifically with the High Republic, I've talked to you about, I can see, like, Eivor and Elzar. There's cracks there. There's something here. There is things mentioned in the High Republic that, you know, people kind of gloss over, but eventually when you look at, you know, Anakin, his downfall, Anakin is the ultimate, that is where the Foundation simply fell apart. But the cracks, I want to see the cracks starting to bloom.
I think we're going to get that, right? I think yeah, it makes regardless a lot of
yeah.
Well, and I think we're going. It makes a lot of sense to have the path of the. We're going with it. The path of the open fist to come.
What
back
is it called and, again? I'm sorry.
It's the path of the open hand.
Oh my god! Why wouldn't it be a fist? Ugh.
Well, it becomes the path of the closed fist when Marta Rhode takes over.
All right. Thank but you. Sorry. The open. Yeah, I combined.
I got
it.
You.
Yeah,
yeah,
I get that.
It's all good. It's all good. We still love you.
No, you don't. But that's fine. Anyway,
but I do think it makes the most sense to, based on just like, if we're bringing in something that we've had before, we're building off of the High Republic books, which I don't think the High Republic books are going to be required reading, but I do think no. Leslie Headland is building off of them. If we consider those elements, it makes the most sense to have the Path of the Open Hand come back, because you've got a story of, we just had different beliefs than the Jedi and they shut us down, right? What a better story for the Sith to tell than that. And that can start to, again, form those cracks both within the Jedi and the public opinion of the Jedi. And there's another shot in with the woman that I was referencing before with the white swirls on her head, where she's in her blue robes and she's surrounded by a group of women in their blue robes and everybody has their palms open, which was for gifts freely given from the Path of the Open Hand. That's how they would greet each other, was with open palms like that.
Yeah.
So if you go, it's at the, if you want to look at it, it's at the 30, right at the 30 second mark, pause your trailer.
Yeah, thank you. Cause I got it open.
Yeah. It's very much a Path of the Open Hand kind of pose there. So again, like, set your expectations appropriately. It may have nothing to do with it, but it does make a lot of sense to me to have them come back, whether they reference it directly and it's an important reference or it's something that
us, well, they clearly made it one get. Because they're a part of a 1 minute and 45 second trailer.
They're
so you
important.
Gotta look into
yes.
that. Yeah,
I think these people are clearly important. Whether they clearly reference them as the Path of the Open Hand or they are some offshoot that has evolved later, like, I'm not sure. But I definitely think there's a possibility of a connection there. And you need something to get these Jedi to start questioning. Again, like, we've got to lead to Qui-Gon Jinn being able to, and Dooku being able to question the Jedi Order and that bringing fear to the Order as an institution. And I just keep thinking about the fact that we have characters who are going to have been alive during what we've got, what we're getting with the Nile and the High Republic. You have Vernestra making her triumphant return, the best character in the High Republic, so you've got to have her in this show. Obviously makes sense. And then you also have Yonis Satomos, Wookiee Jedi, right? That
presumably
Wookiee Jedi,
Buryaga.
Presumably, but we have no evidence, so I'm going to work off
exactly.
of it's not Buryaga.
Exactly.
But if we go off of what we know about Wookiees, a Wookiee of that size is probably 150 to 250 years old, right? Like, that's what Chewie is in Solo, somewhere in there. So that is a youngling or older during the book series of the High Republic. So you've got these connections to the past. You've got these people who can start telling the stories of what has happened before and start to really push back against what the Path of the Open Hand could be saying and the Jedi questioning themselves. So again, going back to what you were talking about earlier of, I want to get different perspectives. I want to get different ideas. And I want to start to see what those cracks that are starting to form. I think that leads to all of it in a very logical way. I think you have both the mix of the possibility of the Path of the Open Hand being back. You have Jedi who were alive during the time of the Nile, and then you bringing in actors and actresses who are extremely capable of showing subtlety in profound ways. And I'm specifically thinking of Lee Jung, you know, with his work in Squid Game, and Carrie Ann Moss and her work in The Matrix. Like, they are able to go to extremes, but they're also able to give you just subtle differences in the way that they stand, in the way that they hold themselves, and the look that they have, where if you're not paying attention, you're going to miss it, but you're always going to feel that something is different. That is a powerful kind of actor or actress to bring in. And I don't think, again, like, I think there's a lot of intentionality behind the show. I think that the trailer and the quotes from Leslie Headland that we've talked about just continue to prove to me that there is an intentionality behind the show, maybe even more intentionality behind it than we've seen in any of the Star Wars shows thus far.
And that we desperately need.
Encouraging. Yeah, I mean, like, let's just call a spade a spade. Like, Mando didn't have a major intentionality behind it. It's evolving as it goes. Ahsoka, I think, had some basic intentionality behind it, but I think that kind of is evolving as it goes as well, especially now with the Laws of Ray Stevenson. Season 2 has to evolve into being something different than what was originally intended. Book of Boba Fett, I've said at the end, you know, with the whole, well, maybe we aren't supposed to be doing this. It's like, okay, what the hell were we doing the whole time then? And then, you know, looking at Obi-Wan, that was supposed to be a movie and it got extended out, which takes away some of the intentionality and the crispness of the story. We haven't had the chance to see a story with this kind of intention behind it yet in this Disney Plus era. And it's really, outside really exciting to see. Outside of Andor.
And
the only, I was forgetting something.
And people always think that, you know, I don't talk about Andor a lot. And that is specifically a me problem. I'm ultimately tired of the timeline. And I love Andor. I'm hoping this is Jedi Andor. And it's treated more like Andor than
That's
anything
a
else
great
we've
way
gotten.
To put it.
And it's like I said. You know, and I haven't watched Russian Dolls yet. I do plan on watching it before The Acolyte. I wanted to know what the showrunner, Leslie Headland, like what her tone is, what her thought process is. Obviously, showrunners, you know, their depiction of things change depending on the shows they do. But I want to, like, kind of learn more of her style. So I will check that out. But I'm just hoping that we get the story and the way it's shot is more along the lines of Andor, because Andor is very rich. I just specifically don't talk about it enough because I'm not a fan of that timeline. I'm honestly over it. I'm so excited for Andor season 2, but I'm more excited for this. This has been on my list for a very long time, and I just hope that the way they have, I hope that they are treating it as such, because, like I said, and I'm going to double down until, actually, even when the series ends, this is a testing ground for Lucasfilm. The High Republic was a huge testing ground when it comes to a cheaper market via books. Books are one of the least profitable things for Lucasfilm, and they slowly came out with that. And now we're finally getting, even though it's at the tail end, which I think is appropriate because you're letting the writers do their story with the books, it is another testing ground. If The Acolyte succeeds, it will tell Kathleen Kennedy, okay, we can take more chances. We can do stuff like this. And that's completely up to the showrunners, the studios, the writers, everything. But there's a lot more writing on this show than people think. Like, quite literally, the future of Star Wars diversity telling shows is writing on this show. That's how I feel personally. Like, this show is a hit, whether fair or not, it's going to tell Lucasfilm, okay, yeah, we can tell more stories like this.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And I think it'll affect not just the TV shows going forward, because I do think we're going to get less and less Disney Plus series. I think Disney Plus is going to become more of a hub where...
100%, as it should be.
We get, you know, a series every year or maybe every other year instead of three series a year, which I'm totally fine with. And then we get, you know, you have all the backlog of Disney movies and slowly releasing the new movies on there and stuff like that.
Look, ultimately, I'm just down for great storytelling.
That's what I think this is going to, it has to be great storytelling so we continue to, not that Mandalorian and Grogu isn't going to be great, but so that we don't continue to fall back on stalwarts over and over again. Not that the Rey movie is not going to be great, but again, like, we don't want to fall back on stalwarts like that over and over again.
So
and that's kind of what we're doing, and Acolyte is a chance to change that.
Yeah, so one of the things I want to ask you about, and again, I'm kind of rehashing some things. It's what I do, so fuck off. This is Sith Talk. Just kidding. But with Amanda Sandberg, I've often, or already in this episode, theorized that I don't think she's the big bad at all. I think she's just an opposite opponent trying to chase down whatever this story is. Man, I'm telling you, the opening scene... when she says, which it's presumably her, "I see fire," I immediately got Rise of the Red Blade vibes. Like a misunderstood Jedi Padawan gone rogue based on not being heard, maybe possibly being written off. And this whole dichotomy of the Jedi and the code and the way you should be perceived, that she was one of the castaways, essentially. I really got Red Blade vibes, and I just wanted to know what your thoughts were, specifically on, again, it's a couple pieces of dialogue and a little bit of a character arc, but, like, man, I thought of you immediately. The moment she said, "I see fire," I was like, Rise of the Red Blade.
I can definitely see that. I'm watching through the trailer now. If I remember correctly, yeah. So... it's interesting because Vernestra is standing behind those younglings at that point when she says, specifically, we see her specifically when the first youngling says life.
Yeah, I'm looking at the shot right now.
And then it cuts back to Carrie Ann Moss. And then, so where she says, "I see fire," that would put Vernestra just left of the screen if you're looking at the trailer. Yep. At the 1:12 mark for those playing along at home. It's definitely very interesting.
It's very quick, too. You got to catch it.
It is. It is. And I didn't necessarily make the connection to Rise of the Red Blade. I definitely think that you're onto something there. I don't know if it was a direct reference, but...
not a direct reference, but just the castaway. Seeing where she might have fell in the cracks already.
And I'll be interested to see... I'm currently reading Defy the Storm. I'm only about 20 pages in, but... for those of you who have been keeping up, Vernestra, minor spoiler alert, it's in the Tales of Light and Life if you want to read about it, but Vernestra's gone off on her own for a while.
Yep.
To try to figure things out. And so, to me, that's a fire, is a fire in her is burning, trying to figure out who she is as a Jedi, what she's going to be, what the Jedi mean to her, like what happens when a Jedi fails, all of these things that because she was... so young when she became a Jedi Knight, she's never really faced before. Now we're getting a more grizzled veteran Vernestra Rowe, who's been around for, at this time, somewhere around 100 years. So she's seen some things. And so it's interesting that in this scene, we're going to have Vernestra standing in the background as this youngling says, "I see fire." I see a connection there of Vernestra's passion for the Jedi Order, but also the confusion that we've seen her have. All of that spells fire to me. A fire is, it's passion, but it's burning. It can be destructive if not contained. And it can also represent like a confusion or misunderstanding of, that is a seed of anger and maybe even resentment, which makes me also think of who they cut to after that, which is Carrie Ann Moss's character. So I think maybe we kind of have maybe some kindred spirits in her character and Vernestra, and maybe Vernestra has walked this path and Carrie Ann Moss's character is thinking she can walk the same path but get a different result. There's a lot of possibilities there with that line. I think it's very interesting, and I don't think it's accidental that it was included, because there's a very Ray on Octo vibe of, you know, what do you see, life, death, between it all, balance. There's that kind of vibe going on, but then you just throw in this thing, fire, and it's like, that is a very weird thing for somebody to see within the Force. And we haven't seen the Force referenced like that before. We haven't seen, you know, in the different interpretations or ways that Jedi see the Force. We've seen water, we've seen wind, we've seen music. We haven't seen fire. That seems very different. It seems almost very dark side. So I'm very intrigued to see where that line leads. And I'm guessing that that is going to happen in those first two episodes. I think most of what we've gotten in this trailer, at least in the first half, is going to be in the first two episodes.
So I'm looking through that interview and I'm trying to find the plot point. What did she say? Keep talking about some more things while I look this up, because there was something that was said about the trailer itself. I believe she said that the trailer has stuff from episodes 1 through 4.
So, like, you really get from the right about to the 1 minute mark, I think it is.
Right.
You get a lot of the same stuff right after. After you see Vernestra, after it says Age of Light,
yeah,
you start to get more cuts between different settings. Yeah. And I think that's going to be more of our stuff with the 3 and 4 or 1 through 4. I really think the first half, you're kind of seeing the same 2 or 3 settings. And so I think that's going to primarily be our premiere 2 episodes, where you establish those characters, and then, you know, we're gonna have the red herring of Amanda Seyfried's character, kind of getting audiences to that, particularly audiences that are not you and I, who don't know, you know, the minutia of the Sith and stuff, to think that that's our main antagonist when really it's not. That I think is gonna kind of be the idea of the first two episodes, is trying to get us to believe that the villain is somebody other than the villain, whether that's the Path of the Open Hand, Amanda Sandberg's character, or a combination of both. I think that's what we're going to be looking at in those first two episodes.
Yeah, and I'm glad I read through this interview, because my initial thing was I was hoping that this would be all of episodes 1 and 2. And that is not the case. Now, obviously, we don't know what is what and where it's where. You know, their shots in from 1 to 4 could mean quick shots. Because yeah, my original thing was a very dark thing. Like, when we get to the end of that trailer, I was like, man, I'm telling you, what if the end of episode 2 is those Jedi going up against this presumed Sith Lord, and they're just getting wiped out, and it's just like quick shot, not even showing the Sith Lord, boom, end. That would be crazy, but we have no idea.
I'll be interested to see when and if they put out the release schedule, because I'm presuming it's going to be 8 episodes. I think
it's 8 episodes. That's confirmed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're getting a quarter of the show on June 4th. Is there going to be a mid-season break? It's going to be really interesting to me to see, because I think if there is a mid-season break where maybe we skip a week, or conversely, if we have another double week, that could lead to very interesting, like, are they leaving us on a cliffhanger one of these weeks, where maybe that shot of the red lightsaber flying is actually the end of an episode, and we have to wait a week to figure out what it is.
Oh, I think it 100% has to be. I mean, that's huge for TV.
Yeah, and there's two other things that, like, kind of stood out to me just as we're talking about this. One, there is the scene of somebody running in front of fire, which I just wanted to point out because we talked about there being fire. But also there's the snow planet and the ship crashing on that. That feels very different from all the other settings. So that feels like it could be later in the series than what we're getting in the first half. And of course, you know, ice and stuff representing death, and we have, of course, Hoth and the things that went wrong for the rebellion there could be a shorthand of showing us things going wrong for the Jedi at that point in the series. So always looking at the weather and stuff like that. That's just what I do because I am me and I have a brand and I'm going to keep it. Exactly. I'm the weatherman. Yeah. I like water and caves. Note to the audience is no caves yet. So we'll wait and see.
No, you're wrong. You're wrong, motherfucker. That's in the trailer.
No.
There's caves in the trailer.
No. There's not a cave. They are standing outside of
a cave.
No, they're standing outside of a structure built into the wall of something.
Oh, I'm looking at it right now. That looks like a freaking cave. I'm looking at it too.
You're at the 22nd mark or the 120 mark? 126?
I'm at I'm at 126 exactly.
Okay. I mean, yeah. I'm thinking it's a cave, but it could be a Jedi temple of some sort. So, also, I don't know if you have your subtitles on, but one of these characters' names is Jekki, and I would just like to put on the record that I hate that as a name. So
Jekki, the new Becky, baby.
Oh, don't. Please, Lindsay, you know, don't name any future dogs or children Jekki. Just
she 100% will, but listen, guys.
Just to spite me.
So, like, to be clear, guys, even in this interview alone, there's probably another hour to an hour and a half on this interview with Leslie Headland. And we're going to continue to keep diving into this. Me and Brandon, or Lindsay, depending on the day, we're going to keep breaking this down and keep getting more and developing more on this trailer. But just so you guys can kind of like get a breaking point of what we've discussed today, we're going to add on to this. This is initial stuff, and this is my highly acclaimed, like, my biggest thing I want out of Star Wars. Next to the Mangold, you know, beginning of the Jedi Order, the history. But this specifically is like top notch. So next episode, we're going to continue to dive on based on any new news that's come out about the show. But specifically this interview, because to tease the next episode, she talks about old EU lore that she's incorporated. She's talked about the level of dedication of the actual actors going through it. And there's just so much to break down, like her philosophies with George Lucas and how she feels about him, which I think is very important. And we haven't really heard a whole lot of showrunners really dive into that, specifically George Lucas, the EU, and then going into her actual experience. But to get a clean cutting point, guys, our listeners, guys and girls, take everything that you've had, enjoy this trailer, check out our thoughts, see what you think about it, let it stew, and we're going to continue this conversation on the next episode of Sith Talk. With that being said, guys, that is this episode. You can find me at Sith Talker 25 talking all things Star Wars, Spartan Race, specifically Deccas and barbecue. Brandon, where can they find you? And why don't you tell us a little bit more about what we do here at Clashing Sabers?
So you can find me at Clashing Sabers on pretty much everything. I referenced earlier our Facebook group, which is kind of our hub where our community interacts. So make sure you go over and join that. It's Star Wars Clashing Sabers. We've got some wonderful people in there. It's not a super large group. We're at about 430 people, which is great because you're not getting flooded with just a whole bunch of random memes and pictures, but you're actually being able to have people have really in-depth and good conversations. So if you like stuff like this, if you like what we're doing, you're definitely going to enjoy that group. And if you are looking forward to The Acolyte and you're a High Republic reader, or you know read EU or anything like that, join our nonprofit. Actually, you know what? scratch that. Even if you've never read a Star Wars book before, join our nonprofit, because I'm sure you know how impactful that books are. I'm sure you've read a book that impacted you, and that's what we are trying to do by getting Star Wars books into classrooms across the country. So we've already been able to spread the gospel of Vernestra Row to a couple other classrooms across the country, and plan on continuing to do so, and put High Republic books in there, old EU books in there, new canon stories. We're spreading all of the Star Wars stories to share with kids and teachers, and that's just a really powerful way that we can make sure that our voices are heard, both that we want more stories like this, and that Star Wars is important to us, so that they continue to make Star Wars content for generations to come. And so that's kind of what we're trying to do over there. So if you want to join that, you can join that at patreon.com/clashingsabers.
And to add on to the next episode of Sith Talk, there is a decent conversation that Leslie had about Vernestra Row. So we'll tease that in too.
Ooh,
but
yeah.
With that being said, guys, and for the future, until the Acolyte, this is a new goodbye. In an age of light, a darkness rises.
All Clashing Sabers productions are the intellectual property of the Clashing Sabers Network and ClashingSabers.net. All licensed sounds and images are the property of their respective copyright holders and are used for informational and educational purposes only. For more information on our nonprofit or to nominate a teacher, go to ClashingSabers.net. For questions or inquiries, please email us at ClashingSabersNetwork@gmail.com.
You're just going to walk away?